others.
This, to me, is the greatest need in our life. And that's where we should put the importance on that particular need. The need to get back to what has accounted for the survival and progress of universal man on this earth. And put emphasis there over what's available. Because we know when we were brought from Africa here as slaves, we know what was available, the opportunity to be free. So we cannot, at times, respect what's available over what's needed. Thank you very much. Assalamu alaikum. Takbir! Takbir! Takbir!
Allahu Akbar. We thank you, Brother Imam, for your wonderful comments. Praise be to Allah.
Brothers and sisters, ladies and gentlemen, dear people, at this time I would like to present to you your leader, my leader, Imam W.D. Muhammad. Thank you very much.
Assalamu alaikum. That is peace be unto you. We give praise to the one Lord and Creator, whose name in the Muslim world, in our holy book, and in the Muslim world is Allah. And we ask peace and blessings upon the last messenger of God, Muhammad the Prophet. Thank you, Brother Imam Rahman, Bashir Rahman, and it is indeed a great pleasure, and I'm humbled to be in the presence of such people that are sitting here at the head table and in the audience from the community of Denver and the area here. This occasion deserves our support. And I come really to support the occasion. I will speak very briefly on education. I would say the regard for education and that we have as Muslims and that we should have, all of us should have. For Muslims, knowledge is a sacred property. And we believe that this universe is one, created by one Lord, and it bears the design of that one Lord, and that there are authorities that we should first be aware of, and that is the authority of God, and then the authority of God's law operating in his creation, and the authority of man who has dedicated himself to serve that law, to respect that law, and serve that law for the good of humanity. With us, that Lord is Allah, and the second authority is the rule of nature created by God, and the third authority I mentioned is exemplified in Muhammad the Prophet, that we hope to model ourselves after, at least model our Muslim behavior after. And for us in education, this is very important because it gives us a sense of purpose, a sense of place in the universe, and a sense of purpose. When man acknowledges the Lord Creator, who's responsible for everything that we have in existence, as Arabs say, "Lam tujad wahdaha," creation does not exist by itself. When we accept that kind of idea and have that kind of respect for Allah, for the Lord Creator, and for the creation, it kind of work in our favor and ease the way for our intellect to grasp and understand the simple and very complex and difficult knowledge that is needed for man in his life and in the life of society. I truly believe in my heart that the biggest problem we have in education, and I'm not trying to pass myself off tonight as a scholar or as an educator. My formal education just goes to high school. I graduated from high school, and I have 3 hours English credit in English 101. So I don't want to pass myself off tonight as a scholar or as an educator. But I thank God that I've had the curiosity and have taken the time to study many books. And I don't feel shy around many of you who consider yourselves to be educators and scholars. because there are some very simple fundamentals working in the universe. And when you understand those simple fundamentals, then you are really on the same basis with everybody else who has knowledge. Now, I do believe that the trouble with the world of education, main trouble, is that we forget how knowledge began. We forget the focus for the progress and development of material sciences, the material sciences, and the human sciences. It all began with men thinking, observing the workings in the universe and the world around them, in the society around them, and the things that operate in creation, and finding a unity, finding the purpose, believing that something is behind all of this. That's where it all began, and respecting the design that is working within creation for the unity and function of the total universe, and also for the unity and correct function of man himself as an individual, as a person, and also as the society. So when we lose that, we should teach that. Even if we are not religious, we should make sure that our children, our schools, and our children have some knowledge, some good knowledge of how knowledge itself came in the world in man and advanced and progressed. Today, you know, when we think about knowledge, we think about it in fragments. Our religion, I think Christianity, and I know Islam, I'm sure, but I would say I know Christianity too, but I've studied the Bible. These religions, Christianity, Islam, Judaism, and other great world religions, these religions preserve for man that respect for the beginning of knowledge and the unity of knowledge. As the creation is one, knowledge is one. And we should respect that and keep that in our, before us, keep that in our focus, and make sure that the children in the schools have respect for that. Now I want to kind of change the focus here and come to our religion. For Muslims, as I said in the beginning of this brief address I'm making, the sciences, knowledge, true knowledge, is sacred property. Our Prophet, peace and blessings be upon him, he says that real knowledge, true knowledge, that is the sciences, is the lost property of the faithful in the religion, of the believers. The lost property of the faithful, the people in religion. That is to say that God, who created this universe, though he is merciful and all of that, and he will allow the bad people to enjoy the good things of his creation up to a limit, and he will allow them to come to have access to the great tools that man needs for himself in the society. But he didn't intend it for the bad people. He intended those great blessings for the good people. He intended it for those people who love him, who devote themselves to the worship of him, who try to serve his will and his purpose. He intended those great tools of knowledge, science, etc., to be our possession. They are our inheritance, according to the teachings of the Holy Book and the Prophet. They are our inheritance. And again, it is important that we know that the Prophet also made it an obligation on the Muslim community to respect knowledge, to work hard to advance knowledge, and to work hard to educate those without knowledge, that is, the masses of people. Long before Western civilization recognized the right for all members of the society, of all citizens, to education, our Prophet demonstrated, preached and demonstrated support for that right by making it an obligation on those who had knowledge to share that knowledge, to pass that knowledge on to the illiterate and ignorant people in the society. Prophet Muhammad himself was a prophet, a teacher, a prophet and a teacher. He taught and educated people, and he preached the message. He did both, and many other things. In fact, he was all around man. He was the head of the state. He was the regulator of the economy of the state. He was in all the roles. He was a soldier on the battlefield. He was the general for the army. He was everything. He was all of these things, the complete man. But that man, that precious man, took the time to teach an uneducated person to read a few letters, to read a line, and made an obligation on those who knew to teach others. The book that he brought, one of the names of the book is That Which Is to Be Read. And that's the name we identify the book by right now, Quran, from Qara'a, which means to read. Quran, that which should be read, or that which is to be read and recited. Lastly, again, it was our Prophet Muhammad, peace and blessings be on him, who brought the community of men to recognize the right of women to an equal share in education. The Prophet gave an incentive to men when he said that if any father will spend on two daughters to see that they are educated, he will be given the paradise by God. God will admit him into the paradise. There is much to be said, but the evening has been, I think, spent well. And the words of Ms. Wallace, so good and so satisfying to my heart, I right away just canceled out about two-thirds of what I was going to say. Thank you very much. Assalamu alaikum.
I would like now to present some of our guests, and I would like to begin with Mrs. Wallace Yvonne Ponch. I hope I pronounced the name correctly. And as I stated earlier, she is on the board board of directors, or she's the chairman of the Council for Self-Development, which produces a directory for civic, for all the civic and the social organizations in Denver. So at this time, I would like to present to you Mrs. Wallace, and at the same time, I would like to present to you, and I think this is an historical event, in the light of the fact that it is indeed our first annual awards dinner, and at this time, I'd like to present this to you and ask you to just greet us just for a few minutes.
Thank you very much. It is always indeed an honor to receive an award for what I'm not real sure, but I'm grateful that my name came up and they felt that I should have this award. But most of all, I am flattered because they ask my opinion. And I always enjoy it when people ask my opinion about something, because then I'm obligated to express it. The theme tonight is education is a priority. That perhaps is my priority and your priority. Unfortunately, it is not always the priority of many of our black children, teachers, and administrators. I have to talk about black children because those are who that I know the most about. So I want to speak just very briefly about the situation in the Denver public school system. I am a former teacher, so I've been very close to the situation. Also, I have worked very long and very hard in the Denver community with young people. So I know what some of the issues are, and I know what some of the needs are. One of the things that I see in our community is our kids are not being channeled into a lot of the high-tech classes. And if you think that unemployment is bad now among black youth, by the year 2000, it will certainly be critical if we do not insist that our children are put into the high-tech classes. I was listening to a speech by Leon Sullivan, who was the founder of Opportunities Industrialization Centers in Philadelphia. And he sits on the board of General Motors Corporation. And he was talking about how technology is moving so fast that if we don't keep up, we're going to be left out in the cold. And he gave an example of now they're working on a car. For an example, if you would like to go from Denver to Dallas, you can program the car and go to sleep. And when you get to Dallas, a little bell will ring and a voice will say, "You are now in Dallas." This is an example of the technology that is pervading our society. And if we do not get our kids in these high-tech classes, they are going to be left behind. Not only that, but we also need to teach our kids about entrepreneurship and being our own boss and not having to work on a 9-to-5. This is of the utmost importance if we are to be a self-sustained, economically developed culture. Other races, ethnic groups have done it, but we are not emphasizing that enough to our children to be economically independent, and that's one thing that we really need to zero in on. Another thing that disturbs me greatly is as I read the papers about the high dropout rate in the Denver public schools, and I'm not going to quote statistics because I may not get the statistics right, but just be mindful of the fact that the number is far too large. Now let me just paint a worst case scenario for you for all these dropouts. In the first place, if they are in high school because of their youth, they probably have no measurable skills. So they won't be able to get a job. They won't be able to impact the employment market, right? So what's going to happen to all these young people who are dropping out? Many of them, unfortunately, will become drug users, abusers, and pushers. And that will drive up the crime rate. Many of them will contract AIDS and die. Who's going to pay for their health care? What's going to happen to them? Many of the young ladies will become pregnant. Who's going to pay for the support of those babies? These are things that we need to look at as parents. If we do not do something now to decrease the number of dropouts, it is going to reach epidemic proportions. And we are going to be lost as a people. Parents, read to your children. Take them to the library. Expose them to different cultural experiences. Don't just send them or just take them. There's another step that you must also include. And that is to dialogue with your children about what it is they have seen or what it is they have done to improve their verbal skills. We need to get busy now. This is the agenda for 1988, is to make sure that our kids stay in school, that they graduate, that they go to college, that they become entrepreneurs. Think on these things. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Next, we would like to introduce to you from the Mr. Larry Brom, who is the president of the local chapter of the Urban League. Mr. Brom.
Thank you very much. I'm just very honored to be here this evening. I want to personally welcome the Imam Muhammad here to Denver. I understand this is his second trip to Denver. Also to see Muhammad Ali, who I told a story to earlier about having met him when he was 18 years old. And he looked at me a little like, well, maybe I did or maybe I didn't. But I did, okay? And to be on this platform with so many distinguished guests here this evening, to see so many people in the audience who are supporting this event, education is a priority. It's one that all of us have to work for. And I'm sure we're going to hear some outstanding words of wisdom about that subject this evening. For my part, I can only say that I will continue to support your efforts, Bashir, and the efforts of other people in this community who are trying to make educational opportunity real for all of our young people. I'm glad to be here again. Thank you for the honor.
Thank you. Thank you. Next, we want to move right on. We'd like to have Dr. King, who is a professor at the Colorado University in Boulder, Colorado. Dr. King.
Good evening. I am honored to be with you this evening. I am also honored to receive this recognition of my endeavors. One of my heroes, Dr. William Edward Burkhardt Du Bois, who was born 120 years ago last week in Great Barrington, Massachusetts, pointed out that we need to make a distinction between education that helps us to understand life and education that is simply a means of preparing us to earn a living. I like to believe that what I have been doing at the University of Colorado at Boulder as director of the Black Studies program for the last 16 years is helping young people understand themselves. Because when you know who you are, you know what you can do. Thank you.
Next, we would like to present to you from the Metro State University here in the city of Denver, we have Dr. Ali Tabani.
Assalamu alaikum, brothers and sisters. Needless to say, I am very honored to have been invited to be on the platform and to take part in this program with a very distinguished group of people from the Denver community as well as from across the nation. In reference to the theme of tonight's program, education is a priority. I think Sister Yvonne Wallace Ponce already referred to some of the most important points, the necessity for education for our people. But I would like to concentrate on one particular point that we as Muslims face in the Western world, particularly in this country. As all of you probably are quite aware, that we are still viewed with many negative perspectives by the majority people here. The Muslims are still viewed as a bunch of lunatics. All the Muslims are equal to Ayatollah Khomeini. and we are carrying and waving our sword. Those are the images when a Muslim child of 12 years old gets shot and killed by Israeli bullets. There is not much outcry in this country. When a Muslim sister who is pregnant gets killed by Israeli bullets, there is not much protest from the government and the officials of this country. So that points that we have a long way to go before the rights of the Muslim brothers and sisters are recognized all over the world. There is a struggle that we must not leave behind. We must continue to keep in the forefront of our thoughts. That as we educate our children, we educate them not only in the tools of economic survival, but also in the morality and the strength of Islam. And one of the strongest points about Islam is the universal brotherhood that exists in the religion, and we must never forget that. Once again, I thank you very much, Brother Rahman, for inviting me. Thank you.
Next, we would like to hear from, and lastly, we have with us this evening from the Bethesda Church here in Denver, we have Pastor Reverend Alexander.
Honored and pleased to be here tonight in your presence. I thank Almighty God. I'm grateful to be at this meeting and this gathering of such eloquence. We highly regard education and inspiration and revelation, the teaching of Almighty God, the humble servant of sharing and caring, the type of ministry that will go forth and teach our young people. We are happy to be a part of the educational system to teach them to go forward, stand tall, walk upright, live morally, clean, and in the fear of God. We're thankful and grateful again to all of you.
Thank you. Thank you. And lastly, we would like just to acknowledge Dr. Hamilton, who is here in the audience, Dr. Paul Hamilton, who is a professor at the University of Denver, and he also teaches the Black Studies. Dr. Hamilton, thank you very much. Thank you. Thank you. We would like to get on into our program, and I would like to take this opportunity to introduce to you the American Muslim leader, Imam W.D. Muhammad. Imam, just to give you a brief history of Imam W.D. Muhammad, his work of restoring truth and the clarity in the social institutions of America has caused him to travel America and the entire world. Imam W.D. Muhammad has responded to the calls of the people. His wisdom and his intellectual clarity are among the many, many qualities. Imam W.D. Muhammad has made these fine qualities that I'm referring to, the wisdom, the intellectuality of Imam Muhammad, has made him the most popular Muslim leader in these United States. Many Muslims in countries other than the United States have accepted Imam W.D. Muhammad as their leader. In analyzing his works, we find that scholars and students of sociology and psychology, anthropology, we feel they are obligated to respect the wisdom of this man, because his works as a Muslim leader, it challenged them to produce a theory or set of principles that can explain how he was able to become the leader for a large group of people whose thinking and whose values and goals were fundamentally different from Muslims all over the earth. Imam Muhammad not only became the leader about 13 years ago for this group of people, but he was able to lead them into the acceptance of a new personal and social value with more confidence and vigor than they had before. The schools of behavior sciences cannot provide their students with a system or method for achieving such a social phenomenon. In fact, American social and psychological scientists are forced to explain Imam Muhammad's ability to lead thousands of people from a racist, man-worshipping, militant, unscientific, separatist organization into the Islamic system for life as a marvel or a miracle for man. So without further remarks, it is indeed a pleasure, it is an honor to have Imam W.D. Muhammad in the city of Denver, Colorado. To me, it is indeed a historical event. In this day, from the aura of confusion, all seem troubled by the dilemma of the world's social crisis. There are many people who feel fixated with the idea of disparity. And because of this disparity, one wonders who will fulfill the prophecy of mankind's promises, who shall lead forth from the bowels of knowledge solution to remedy the insensitivity which has taken a stronghold across the land. Brothers and sisters, ladies and gentlemen, dear people, at this time I would like to present to you your leader, my leader, Imam W.D. Muhammad. Thank you very much.
Assalamu alaikum. That is peace be unto you. We give praise to the one Lord and Creator, whose name in the Muslim world, in our holy book, and in the Muslim world is Allah. And we ask peace and blessings upon the last messenger of God, Muhammad the Prophet. Thank you, Brother Imam Rahman, Bashir Rahman, and it is indeed a great pleasure, and I'm humbled to be in the presence of such people that are sitting here at the head table and in the audience from the community of Denver and the area here. This occasion deserves our support, and I come really to support the occasion. I will speak very briefly on education. I would say the regard for education and that we have as Muslims, and that we should have, all of us should have. For Muslims, knowledge is a sacred property, and we believe that this universe is one, created by one Lord, and it bears the design of that one Lord, and that there are authorities that we should first be aware of, and that is the authority of God, and then the authority of God's law operating in his creation, and the authority of man who has dedicated himself to serve that law, to respect that law, and serve that law for the good of humanity. With us, that Lord is Allah, and the second authority is the rule of nature created by God, and the third authority I mentioned is exemplified in Muhammad the Prophet, that we hope to model ourselves after, at least model our Muslim behavior after. And for us in education, this is very important because it gives us a sense of purpose, a sense of place in the universe, and a sense of purpose. When man acknowledges the Lord Creator, who's responsible for everything that we have in existence, as Arabs say, "Lam tujat wahdaha," creation does not exist by itself. When we accept that kind of idea and have that kind of respect for Allah, for the Lord Creator, and for the creation, it kind of works in our favor and ease the way for our intellect to grasp and understand the simple and very complex and difficult knowledge that is needed for man in his life and in the life of society. I truly believe in my heart that the biggest problem we have in education, and I'm not trying to pass myself off tonight as a scholar or as an educator. My formal education just goes to high school. I graduated from high school, and I have 3 hours English credit in English 101, so I don't want to pass myself off tonight as a scholar, as an educator. But I thank God that I've had the curiosity and have taken the time to study many books, and I don't feel shy around many of you who consider yourselves to be educators and scholars. Because there are some very simple fundamentals working in the universe. And when you understand those simple fundamentals, then you are really on the same basis with everybody else who has knowledge. Now, I do believe that the trouble with the world of education, main trouble, is that we forget how knowledge began. We forget the focus for the progress and development of material sciences, the material sciences, and the human sciences. It all began with men thinking, observing the workings in the universe and the world around them, in the society around them, and the things that operate in creation, and finding a unity, finding the purpose, believing that something is behind all of this. That's where it all began. And respecting the design that is working within creation for the unity and function of the total universe, and also for the unity and correct function of man himself as an individual, as a person, and also as the society. So when we lose that, we should teach that. Even if we are not religious, we should make sure that our children, our schools, and our children have some knowledge, some good knowledge of how knowledge itself came in the world, in man, and advanced and progressed. Today, you know, when we think about knowledge, we think about it in fragments. Our religion, I think Christianity, and I know Islam, I'm sure, I would say I know Christianity too, but I've studied the Bible. These religions, Christianity, Islam, Judaism, and other great world religions, these religions preserve for man that respect for the beginning of knowledge and the unity of knowledge As the creation is one, knowledge is one. And we should respect that and keep that in our, before us, keep that in our focus, and make sure that the children in the schools have respect for that. Now I want to kind of change the focus here and come to our religion. For Muslims, as I said in the beginning of this brief address I'm making, the sciences, knowledge, true knowledge, is sacred property. Our Prophet, peace and blessings be upon him, he says that real knowledge, true knowledge, that is the sciences, is the lost property of the faithful in the religion, of the believers. The lost property of the faithful, the people in religion. That is to say that God, who created this universe, though he is merciful and all of that, and he will allow the bad to enjoy, the bad people to enjoy the good things of his creation up to a limit, and he will allow them to come to have access to the great tools that man needs for his for himself in the society. But he didn't intend it for the bad people. He intended those great blessings for the good people. He intended it for those people who love him, who devote themselves to the worship of him, who try to serve his will and his purpose. He intended those great tools of knowledge, science, etc., to be our possession. They are our inheritance, according to the teachings of the Holy Book and the Prophet. They are our inheritance. And again, it is important that we know that the Prophet also made it an obligation on the Muslim community to respect knowledge, to work hard to advance knowledge, and to work hard to educate those without knowledge, that is, the masses of people. Long before Western civilization recognized the right for all members of society, of all citizens, to education, our Prophet demonstrated, preached and demonstrated support for that right by making it an obligation on those who had knowledge to share that knowledge, to pass that knowledge on to the illiterate and ignorant people in the society. Prophet Muhammad himself was a prophet, a teacher, a prophet and a teacher. He taught and educated people, and he preached the message. He did both, and many other things. In fact, he was all around man. He was the head of the state. He was the regulator of the economy of the state. He was in all the roles. He was a soldier on the battlefield. He was the general for the army. He was everything. He was all of these things, the complete man. But that man, that precious man, took the time to teach an uneducated person to read a few letters, to read a line, and made an obligation on those who knew to teach others. The book that he brought, one of the names of the book, is that which is to be read. And that's the name we identify the book by right now, Quran, Quran. From Qara'a, Qara'a, which means to read. Quran, that which should be read, or that which is to be read and recited. Lastly, again, it was our Prophet Muhammad, peace and blessings be on him, who brought the community of men to recognize the right of women to an equal share in education. The Prophet gave an incentive to men when he said that if any father will spend on two daughters to see that they are educated, he will be given the paradise by God. God will admit him into the paradise. There is much to be said, but the evening has been, I think, spent well, and the words of Ms. Wallace, so good and so satisfying to my heart, I right away just canceled out about two-thirds of what I was going to say. Thank you very much. As-salamu alaykum.